Welcome to Peanut Butter and Jelly Shoes. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Tiffany.
What did we watch today, Tiffany?
Today we watched a classic from 1995. It hadn't been on our radar, but you mentioned it, and I got so excited.
You lit up.
Tom and Huck.
And 90% of the people listening are probably like, what?
Maybe.
But if you are between the ages of early 30s to early 40s, you know what we're talking about, especially if you're a female lady.
Listen, if you've ever heard of Jonathan Taylor Thomas, this movie was your jam.
Oh, yeah. It's this was a Disney feature. Came out in 95, as you said.
But it was like peak JTT. So it was made for girls just to go to the theater to see him. Oh, they could have put him in anything.
Right, yeah. So this is a movie. It's starring Jonathan Taylor Thomas as Tom Sawyer.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Sawyer.
Thomas Sawyer.
His friends call him Tom.
I don't have that kind of rapport with him yet.
No.
Got it. I know. I'm still on like Aunt Polly, not even Aunt Polly level familiar with JTT. And then Huck is also in the movie, who is played by
Brad Renfro.
Right. Who, in case you don't know, was also.
He was pretty hot at that time.
Yeah, he was. He never achieved JTT level, but he was in like the Tiger Beat magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also didn't know him, but I feel like he wouldn't have wanted to be the same heartthrob status level.
Yeah, I think
he seemed too cool.
What else was he in?
The Cure?
What? The band?
He also did a stint in the band The Cure.
Marvelous.
No, I'm pretty sure that was him, but now you've made me second guess it, so I've got to.
No, but I've never.
He wasn't The Cure.
What is The Cure?
It's a really sad movie, actually. It's about a guy whose friend, he befriends someone, another kid, and the kid has AIDS.
Of course he has AIDS.
And, like, they're trying to find a cure for his friend so his friend won't die. Spoiler alert, he dies. It's a very sad movie. And I remember he, like, puts his shoe in the coffin. Anyway, this is not the Cure podcast. This is the podcast for Tom and Huck. But he was in that around the same time in 95. But I'm trying to see, like, what kind of was his breakout thing. This movie, maybe.
Child death was, like, big in the early 90s. Between My Girl.
He was an apt pupil.
Oh, but he was, like, older and apt. He was, like. That was like.
It was only 3 years after this, so he was like still.
But that was like an adult movie, right?
What about Tom and Huck was not adult? It was rated PG for villainous acts and tobacco use.
Which I think is the most delightful warning I've ever seen on a film.
I mean, those are pretty adult themes.
They are. The kids also, they swear more than I would have expected for a Disney movie from the 90s.
Yeah, and Huck actively smokes a pipe.
That's right. For some reason, you've flagged me on that multiple times, and yet the fact that there's a child smoking in this movie, I'm just like, eh.
But I don't know if you know this. I don't know if a lot of people listening will know this, but Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn are literary characters.
What?
They did not come from the mind of Disney for this movie. It's based on characters in books.
Tell me more.
Well, there was an author named Mark Twain, mm-hmm. or you may know him as,
Samuel Clemens.
Yeah. He was a satirist and American writer, and he wrote these stories about the adventures of two little boys growing up in the 1830s.
Well, I thought it was 1830s, and I repeated that. It is actually 1840s. I screwed up. I was thrown because the clothing was very 1830s-esque, but then I figured, you know, it's the middle of nowhere Missouri. They would have had outdated clothes, so.
True, and they were poor.
They were poor, so it's like, you know, it actually, like, kind of makes sense.
But they were just, like, two mischievous kids that got up to, like, adventures and shenanigans because there wasn't anything to do other than get into mischief.
Well, and did you ever read Tom Sawyer?
I don't know. I don't know if I ever did.
I never read Tom Sawyer, but I did read Huck Finn.
Yeah. I mean, they're quite problematic, aren't they?
Well, I can't speak for Tom Sawyer because I never read it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this follow the plot of Tom Sawyer. I feel like it does.
I feel like there are characters in this movie that were characters in the books. There are scenes that are, like, very famously associated with Tom Sawyer that are in this movie.
Yeah, all I know is the fence painting.
The fence painting, and I'm familiar with Becky Thatcher and Joe. I just don't feel comfortable saying his full name? Is it, like, casually racist?
It sounds like a car engine, but, like, the slur version of the word engine.
Yeah. So, like, they're both in it. But I thought, and again, this is from me not reading the book, but I thought, like, he was the big scary character that turned out not to actually be big and scary.
Yeah, his introduction. Well, the guy that they cast to play him, Joe, he almost has, like, a little bit of a baby face. And, like, he just had that look about him, like, he is that gruff guy. I totally thought the term was going to, he was going to be like the helper at the end.
Yeah.
Like the Boo Radley character.
Yeah.
No, he's not. He's just the bad guy.
He was a bad guy. Yeah. So we should talk about what happens in this
movie. Oh, sure. So, yeah. So it's, I think the plot roughly of Tom Sawyer. Oh, we open on a dark and stormy night and it's like raining. And then like you see Joe, he's walking into Hannibal, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a town where everything's just in the forest and wet all and dirty all the time. And then he goes to the undertaker who, like, remember, he has like an old lady in a coffin and he's like trying to force the old lady to smile. And I couldn't tell if that was a real old lady or like a puppet old lady.
I mean, I think the skin was fleshy enough. I feel like that was a real person. I don't think that that was a dummy.
He was being very aggressive though. That's why I was like, I was concerned for this.
Trying to make her smile.
Yeah. Which
but
is...
like, also if you're the town undertaker, you would know the tricks for how to do that.
Yeah, you don't just, like, push the cheeks.
No, that's not a real thing.
No, you gotta, like, put wires in there and shit. God, yeah, come on, get your shit together, dude.
Even I know that.
Right. And so Joe comes in and, like, he gives him a job to dig up a grave where I guess there's, like, something in... He knows because he's the undertaker that this dude's buried with something.
Yeah, and he's gonna pay him $2 to do it.
Right, which I looked up the inflation calculator.
Of course you did. How much would that translate to, roughly?
So in 1840...
A couple $100?
Not even. No, again, this could be shaky. This is the internet. And you know the internet has never lied to us before.
Right.
So apparently $2 in 1840 was roughly about $65, $66.
In today's money?
Yes.
That's not enough money for me to dig up a grave.
Okay.
$65? Are you kidding?
Well, to Joe's credit, he puts a gun on the guy and goes, no, it's going to be $3.
So he gets like $70?
That's worth about about $100.
Okay, well, that's a little better.
Right.
It doesn't seem like enough of a payoff.
Also, if you're gonna pull a gun on somebody, like, why not just ask for $5? Shoot the moon.
Yeah, you gotta. What's the worst he's gonna do? Say yes? Like, he's got a gun pointed at him. He's gonna give you the money.
Yeah, so then we have, like, this weird, like, he's like, okay, I'll do it. I'll pay you. And then it's like, they pan up to a closet. This is the weirdest transition. I don't know if you remember this. They like, I was like, okay, I'll get you the money. And then the camera pans up to a clock. And then the clock does like a fade transition to Jonathan Taylor Thomas's face. As if the faces were the same. Like,
well, a clock famously does have a face.
It's true.
And Jonathan Taylor Thomas also famously has a face. So I get the logic there. That seems like a smooth transition. I didn't even notice it.
Oh, yeah.
It worked for me.
It bothered me so much that I wrote it down. And then Jonathan Taylor Thomas, young Tom Sawyer, he's in bed and he's got I just realized his last name is Thomas. So do you think on set Jonathan it was Taylor confusing? There's like, Sawyer. Maybe is that why they called him Thomas in the movie? Because that's how, like, is it like a Tony Danza situation where he has to be called Tony because otherwise he won't respond to a fake name? So they're like, Thomas. And he's like, yeah, that's me.
I don't know. Do you want me to call him and ask him?
Tony Danza? Oh, Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
No, I don't know. I did not think of that. I mean, I think it was the adults called him Thomas and his friends called him Tom. Like, the kids called him Tom.
That's true.
Because he was in trouble a lot. So when you're in trouble, your full name is typically used.
Yes.
So he was addressed as Thomas quite a bit because he was a little bit of a rapscallion.
Oh my God. I literally almost just said rapscallion.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because that's what he is.
Oh, we're so on the same wavelength.
Yes. The rapscallion he is.
Yeah.
And he's sneaking out of his bedroom in the middle of the night to run away from home forever.
Yeah.
And he's got his...
Been there, right? As a kid?
And he has a little cousin that he shares a room with.
His little cousin's a shit.
That kid's a pretty good actor, because that kid looks like he's... Yeah, he's about, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8.
Really? He's so small.
Well, maybe younger. Well, we learned that... Well, maybe we'll get into that later, but the actor's age.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a bit.
Yeah, so he's sneaking out, and he's like, I'm sailing down to the Mississippi with my friends, and we're going to New Orleans to be like riverboat men.
We want to be riverboat captains.
Captains, right.
Not just men.
So he sneaks out of the house, goes to the river with his two knucklehead friends.
I really enjoyed this scene because, like, it's a raft of logs. It's just felled logs tied together.
Loosely tied together.
Loosely tied together with a bed sheet, basically. And he's standing on the front, like, spouting off all this nautical jargon about, like, port side this and to the moon or whatever. I don't know.
To the moon.
And he's like, nothing's going to stop us now. And then the boat... Granted, it's not an enormous river, but it's wider than the raft. There's a rock.
This is dead ahead. To be the Mississippi River, which is a very large and wide river.
Yeah.
It's like people, you famously cannot swim from one side to the other. That's how wide this river is.
Yeah. And they're making it seem like this rock, which it, we're not talking like an iceberg Titanic scenario. This is like a small rock jutting up maybe a foot above the water. And they're like, look out, the rock. So it's just very funny to me. They crash into this rock that they cannot veer around the side of either way. And then they like capsize this raft. So he's sitting there giving this huge speech like, nothing's going to stop me now but this rock.
They're about 30 feet from the dock, too.
Yeah.
So yeah, nothing can stop us. They immediately crash. And also, the best part... Apparently, Tom cannot swim.
Oh, yeah. He was just hanging like...
It's like a birthday clown floating dead in a broken limb.
Yeah. Like body in the river.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just like... He just sinks to the bottom. So I don't know why he's going to be a boat captain. But then he gets... They have a little mermaid scene where he's like rescued from the water by a mystery person who lays him gently upon the shore.
Yeah.
And he's all like, oh, someone saved me.
Yeah.
Oh.
Who could it be?
Who could it be?
It was Huck.
It was Huck. Yeah, Huck saved him.
Yeah.
And then he like disappeared into the forest. Yeah, so then they run back into town. Is this where they run into the town drunk Muff? Yeah.
Muff Potter.
Muff Potter, town drunk, played by a character actor whose name
is Michael McShane.
Michael McShane, who is he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you'd know his face in a second if you saw him.
Yeah, he was
quite funny.
Yes, but he's just like, oh hey boys, blah blah blah, and you can tell they have a bit of a rapport.
Yeah, because he's the town drunk and he's friendly.
Yeah, he likes the kids,
but not in like a creepy way, Caitlin.
No. It didn't feel, there was no creepy vibes. It was like, no. He was clearly just like, hey, fellas, better run home.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember what happens.
I don't know. I mean, like, there's kind of a reunion between Tom and Huck. I guess, like, Huck had been away for a while, and now he's back, and they're kind of hanging out again. And Tom stumbles upon Huck, like, carrying a sack. He's like, what's in the sack? And he's like, oh, it's a dead cat. And he goes on to give this whole explanation about, like, he's taking the cat to the graveyard at midnight to do, like, a weird home remedy to get rid of warts. Which is just a very convoluted way to place these two young boys at the graveyard at midnight while Joe is there with the Undertaker and Muff to dig up this body that they're getting paid the equivalent of $60 for. So they're witnessing everything that's happening in the graveyard, which will come to be very important later on.
That's true. I did love the justification. That sort of like spell about getting rid of warts was so funny. It was like,
yeah.
Oh, you bring a dead cat to the graveyard because it has to be the night when an evil man is buried. The devil will chase the ghost, the cat will chase the devil, and then like the wart would chase the cat.
It was dumb. It was like one of those weird home remedies that like people, like you said, probably still believe in when we were talking about it during the movie.
Okay, I'm going to go to Hollywood Forever and try this. God knows there's plenty of evil assholes buried in Hollywood Forever.
Yeah, there's got to be.
Yeah.
So that's why they're there in the graveyard. And so they see the three adult men unearth this grave, dump a skeleton out of the casket. And then this skeleton, by the way, everything in this graveyard looked 100% like it was made out of paper mache. Like,
totally.
This was all from, like, Michael's post-Halloween. Like, this was the post-Halloween sale at Michael's.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, so they see the skeleton tumbles out of the coffin, and he has, like, this treasure chest that says Muriel or Morel or something on it.
Merle? Yeah, it wasn't an easy to pronounce word.
No. And they open it, it has, like, a treasure chest, and they're like, oh, this is One-Eyed Merle's treasure chest. Cool. And then Joe decides he wants that treasure map for himself.
Oh, yeah, there's a map inside the treasure chest. There's no treasure.
Correct.
But the map leads them to the treasure, and they're so excited about this, but then they're like, nope, it's going to be my treasure. And so they stab the Undertaker.
Well, by they, you mean Joe. The Undertaker decides he wants the treasure map. So he, like, takes a gravestone, like, a headstone that's, like, split in half that looks like it weighs about an ounce. And he, like, whacks Muff across the face with it to, like, get rid of him so he can run off with the treasure map. But then Joe stabs the doctor to death and takes the map and runs away.
Yeah.
To, like, leave the death of the doctor basically to be blamed on Muff. And meanwhile, Tom and Huck witness this whole thing.
And he uses Muff's knife. So then it's like, oh, well, it's his knife. I know that. So, but Tom and Huck witness the whole thing. They're approximately 4 feet away from the stabbing.
Yeah.
And they're hiding behind a wrought iron little fence that's around a single grave. And they're on one side of the grave and the stabbing is happening violently 3 feet in front of them on the other side of the grave.
Yeah, it's wild to me that Joe didn't realize they were there.
Yeah, the blocking in the scene was horrendous.
Yeah.
But then he sees them, the boys run away, Tom Sawyer, this fucking kid, he gets in trouble constantly, and Huck is constantly saving his ass.
Yeah.
He gets his coat caught on a fence, and he's freaking out, and they're like, oh no, we have to save him. So they pull him up, he drops his marble in the process.
Oh, his marble, by the way, we skipped over the famous whitewashing scene, Tom is tasked to paint a fence, and he ends up bribing... Well, not bribing, he convinces the local neighborhood boys that it's so much fun that they should pay him to be able to enjoy the privilege of painting the fence. And one of the boys gifts him a marble. And this is the marble Caitlin's referring to that he loses in the graveyard.
Yes.
That Joe picks up.
That's right. Now, you don't even need the marble, but whatever. I guess it's like a good way to like have a plot, like the reason for the fence washing scene.
Yeah.
So Joe has the marble. His plan is like, oh, he knows this kid saw him. He doesn't know which kid. So he goes into the town the next day and he's like going around asking little kids, is this your marble? Is this, do you know whose marble this is? Is it?
Yeah.
What happens after?
I don't know. This movie, listen, you guys, this movie is a lot. It's a very convoluted plot, right? They witness a murder. They then decide, they get into an argument because Tom wants to tell the town that Muff didn't do it. Because basically we cut to, the town has an actual lynch mob trying to kill Muff.
That's right.
And then an old woman basically puts a stop to it by uttering a few sentences. And then the lawyer or the judge in the town is like, no, we have to have a trial for this. And Tom wants to come forward and tell the truth that they saw it. And Huck is like, no. We swore a blood oath.
That's right, they did a blood oath.
That we wouldn't tell anybody. We can't help him. And then Tom's like, okay, well, what if we don't say we saw who committed the murder, but we find the treasure map as proof that this exists so they'll know Joe was there. So then they start following Joe to try to get the map back. They're basically trying to save Muff throughout this whole movie, but there's a lot of scenes that are put in here that have nothing to do with anything.
Character moments.
I guess. I mean, so like directly after they witness a violent murder, the literal next scene is Tom goes to school. And then we're introduced to Becky. And he's like in trouble for being at school. And his punishment is to sit with the girls.
Right. And he plants that idea on the teacher's head because he's a little pimp, this kid.
Yeah.
He's like, oh no, don't make me sit with the girls. Yeah. Wink.
So then he sits next to Becky. And he's trying to flirt with her by giving her an apple, which like, God, what a time to be alive. It's like, that's how you know a man's intentions, is he just like gifts you an apple.
Oh, and then I felt so awful because I identified, the character I identified with in this movie more so than anyone was, they were like jokingly like kind of tossing the apple back and forth because Becky's playing like, I'm not into you. Put the apple away, Tom. I don't want your apple. So they're like jokingly passing it back and forth. And then Tom ends up giving the apple to the girl sitting in front of them. Just like.
Becky gives her the apple.
Oh, Becky gives her the apple.
Think it's from Tom.
Yes, that's right.
So she now thinks Tom is in love with her.
And this poor little girl, the casting, can you imagine casting this? It's calling for one awkward, ugly child. She wasn't even ugly, she just was like really dopey. Yeah.
She got to be in a scene with JTT at peak JTT, so I don't feel bad for her.
No, she was like so excited that he gave her the apple, and then after school gets let out, she's like standing outside the schoolhouse, and she's got the apple in her hands, and she's like scanning the crowd, and then she sees like Tom run away and she's like just sad, and I'm like, girl,
been there,
feel you.
Yeah, we've all been that girl with the apple.
I still am the girl with the apple.
Okay, I'm there too. And so then like there's this weird thing with like him and Becky, they keep putting scenes of the two of them in there that don't really feel relevant to anything. Like he proposes to her.
Well, remember when Becky tries to kill him?
Becky pushes him into the creek.
Into a he's walking along the edge of a bridge. She pushes him into a creek that's liberally 2 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
And he just falls a solid 15 feet into it. And then he's fine. He gets up and he's fine. And Huck is under the bridge waiting.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, hey, Huck. And Huck's under the bridge because he's like, I want to meet.
He's part troll.
But then he was like, oh, I'm under the bridge. He's like, why are you under the bridge? And he's like, because I'm looking for jerks or something?
I don't remember what he said.
He's like, oh, I'm waiting because I'm looking, basically like the kid version of assholes. He's like, oh, I'm looking for assholes. And then he's like, really? And he goes, well, it worked, didn't it? I found one.
Jackasses.
Yeah. He's like, I'm looking for jackasses. And he's like, see, I found one.
Yeah, there was like a very, not even subtle, I don't think, tone, like subtext throughout the whole movie. Like this very homoerotic.
Oh my, they're in love with each other.
They wanted to make out throughout this entire movie so bad.
The way they look at each other.
I want someone to look at me like that one day.
Right, and then, because Becky's supposedly, like, the girl, but, like, well, there's she is zero. A girl. No, she's the girl, I mean. Oh, okay. Like, she's a girl, yes. As far as I'm aware, Rachel Leigh Cook identifies as a girl. Or at least she did back in 1995.
Yeah.
But he has no affection for her. The way he looks at her is like the way he looks at his Aunt Polly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tom's an orphan, by the way, because it's, you know, if you're a child having adventures, you have to be an orphan.
You have to.
So he lives with his aunt, and like he looks at her the same way he looks at his aunt, which is very just upsetting.
Yeah, but I just remember like actively, because I was about 12 when this movie came out, 11, 12. And I remember actively hating Rachel Leigh Cook because she got to be in this movie and kiss Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Like, I remember that from the trailer they showed them kissing. So, like, I anticipated this movie being, like, a big love story. Spoiler alert, it's not. Mm-mm. She's, like, very awkwardly inserted into this movie just so that they can have him kissing somebody. But I remember actively hating her and being so jealous that to the point where I just didn't like seeing her movies for a while. Because I was like, it's not fair. She got to, I mean, my God, the teenage brain, the young girl's brain is so stupid.
It is stupid, but it's.
But you get it.
No, I was, I think I was 9 or 10 when this came out. And I have not seen it since then, but I saw it several times on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a slumber party hit in the mid-90s. That's the awkward thing looking back on it. You know, this movie was made to like bring young people attracted to Jonathan Taylor Thomas into the theaters.
Now, were you at that age? Were you into him?
I was, but now, like, looking back on this as an adult, I was like, why wasn't I more into Brad Renfro? He's, like, definitely the better looking of the two. Like, looking. Right. Yeah, you know what it is? I have a theory. Young people, like, in that, like, preteen age group are generally attracted to people who are, like, safe.
We've talked about this.
Oh, we have, yeah.
Shout out to the Casper podcast.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but I think that theory is very relevant.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, so it's like, if you, like, people that are attracted to males are into, it's always like willowy, weak-looking little boys.
Like, pretty men.
Right, and like, so many men I know are confused about this, but it's like, no, it's like, when you're young, like, grown big men are terrifying. Like, yeah. They're intimidating and terrifying. So you don't want that. No. Like, you want the willowy little tiny 5'2" Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he fit that mold exactly.
Yeah.
Although, I was shocked to learn. We looked up the ages.
Oh my God. Yeah, this blew my mind. And I don't think I've been right since I learned this. Because, like, I'm looking at this. And, like, Brad Renfro, like Caitlin said, he is clearly now, as 30-something-year-old women, we're sitting here being like, oh, yeah, he's the hot one.
Never said that.
Very awkward. But, well, the better-looking kid, it's, right. Like, a weird thing to still say regardless of the verbiage.
No, he just is, like, he's, like, the more classically handsome of the two.
But, like, he's taller. He looks older.
He's a head taller than JTT.
Easily. And so I made that comment. I was just like, I feel like Brad Renfro is at least like 3 years older than him in this movie. And Caitlin was like, I'm going to look it up. And what she told me changed the course of my life forever.
So JTT.
Yes.
Is a year older than Brad Renfro.
I can't handle that.
So how old do you think they were? Like, what? How old?
I'm guessing JTT was like 13, 14 in this movie.
I don't know when this was shot. It could have maybe sat in production for several years.
Okay.
But
you tell me he's 17 years old.
No. No. So when this movie came out, JTT was 14. Brad Renfro was 13 years old when this was released, which means that
he was younger when it was filmed.
Yeah, he was 12 or 13 when this was filmed.
This just gets crazier.
So, no, Brad Renfro, puberty is so weird because Brad Renfro is easily 6 inches taller than him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like a full head taller than JTT in this movie. He has a deep voice.
Mm-hmm. And he physically looks older, like, apart from the height, like, he just looks older.
Yeah. And, like, well, yeah, and then he's clearly gone through puberty. Whereas JTT is, like, he still has a high-pitched voice. He's still very short. It blew my head. Because my whole life, I thought Brad Renfro was, like, a solid 4 years older than
Donald Thomas. Right, me too.
No. And it's played, like, Huck is the older character, clearly, in this version. Mm-hmm. Huck's the older character. He's constantly saving Tom, like, he saves him, like, 5 times throughout this entire movie. And, like, he even, like, physically, he, like, picks him up and carries him when he saves him from the river.
Yeah.
And he's a fucking, like, 12-year-old boy.
I mean, do you think that when Mark Twain was writing these characters, these were the visual depictions he had in his mind?
No. Okay, so...
Because they were younger, right?
No. Here's the thing. So, this movie really screwed up my entire high school class's perception of the actual books. Because we got in a debate in my English class when I was probably, like, it was, like, sophomore year we read this. And we got in a debate because all of the kids in the class were like, no, Huck Finn is the older, wise character. Tom Sawyer is the little, like, oh, I'm going to follow this kid. We didn't specify, but, I mean, in case you don't know, Huck Finn is, they describe him as, quote, unquote, river trash.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically, like, a orphan who lives on the river who's supposed to be, in this version, like, a teenager who's just, like, that scrappy. He's like, what's the kid in Oliver Twist? Like, the Artful Dodger kind of a character. Mm-hmm. So... but in the actual books, Huck is younger than Tom.
Well, because Tom was introduced first, right? Like, it was The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and then Huck was a character in that universe first, before he had his own book.
Right? Yeah. And the dynamic in that was, like, that Tom Sawyer was, like, the older, street smart, like, because he convinces all the kids to paint the fence. And then Huck Finn is like, the gee willikers, this city kid is, like, smart. I'm going to follow his lead. Yeah. So it really threw us. We actually got in an argument with our English teacher about this because of the movie Tom and Huck. Completely destroyed our perceptions of their dynamic. And he's like, why do you all think Huck Finn is some, like, 18-year-old, like, smart kid? Like, he's like a 7-year-old dumbass. And we were like, Tom and Huck?
Like, I'd like to clarify, Caitlin was not in high school in 1995.
This was years later.
This was
2000s, and we got in an argument with our English teacher because all the girls in the class were...
I feel like Mark Twain would not be pleased.
He probably wouldn't be. He might be mildly amused, but whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know much about Mark Twain.
I don't know a ton either.
All I know is that he came in and out with Haley's Comet.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like we've gotten off track, but, like, this movie, I feel like we're talking, like, how the movie works.
We didn't talk about how Rachel A. Cook, how old she was.
Oh, how old was she?
She was 16.
Yeah, she looked so much older.
She did.
She was even taller than Brad Renfro.
She was.
And
yeah.
She, honestly, kudos to her. I'm sorry I hated you for so long because of, like, a weird adolescent thing, but, like, she looks the same now.
Yeah.
She hasn't aged that much. She looks incredible.
Yeah, good for you, Rachel.
Good for you, Rachel.
Yeah.
What are your secrets?
Tell us your moisturizers.
Yeah. But yeah, so I this movie just, like, is all over the place because it's just this weird, like, they witness a murder, then they have to try to prove this man's innocent, and then they go on, like, all these escapades, but then there are, like, other things inserted in there, like the kiss scene that have nothing to do with anything. And then, like, they cut to the next scene of them trying to steal the map from Joe, who Joe's now off, like, looking for the treasure with this long-haired dude named Emmett.
Yeah.
And they're sleeping in the woods, and Tom and Huck decide the best way to get the map out of Joe's pocket is they take off their shirts, again, for the teenage audience, and cover themselves completely in mud and try to sneak up in broad daylight, not even at night. In broad daylight, they try to sneak up at Tom just by himself to Joe to, like, pull the map out of his pocket. And here's the thing. He could have done this, like, 100 different ways successfully. He tried it one way and was so bad at it. Like, he walked directly in front of him. He didn't come from behind. He didn't come from the side. He walked directly in front of him, like, snapped a twig. So Joe woke up and looked around and couldn't see him.
Thank God Joe had astigmatism or something.
Or he was drunk, or I don't know why he didn't see him. He was, like, directly in front of him.
Well, they have a Joe POV shot. So, yeah, so JTT is covered in mud, wearing nothing but the 1840s version of JNCO jeans. Like, I love how they, like, clearly was like, oh, that's what's hip with the kids. We can't make him look like a square. So, yeah. Like, let's just give him really baggy, like, linen trousers, which look like JNCO jeans.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they have Joe POV, which is a fisheye lens for some reason, because in this universe, Joe sees, like, a fish, whatever. And his eyes pass over a standing still JTT. Even in this vision with him covered in blood, it's clearly a person standing there. And he goes back to sleep.
Dumb.
Really dumb.
And then he proceeds to walk over again directly in front of him, not from the side or behind, with the pace of a sloth. Like, reaches out to grab the map and delicately clasp it. And some of the mud, which this is very disgusting, drips off of his body into Joe's mouth.
Yeah, and he and licks Joe, it up.
Like, licks it up like it's dinner. And, like, he, again, still could have grabbed the map, And then he just sneezes. And then Joe wakes up and runs away. You don't remember when he sneezed? It made a...
Oh, that's right. So we had a conversation about this.
Yes, because then they run away, and somehow Joe doesn't see him. Emmett is nowhere to be found during all of this.
No.
And Joe's like, dumb wild boars. And I'm like, this man's an idiot, confusing a wild boar for a human sneeze. And Caitlin's like, pigs sneeze.
No, no, no. You said boars don't sneeze.
Well, I did not expect them to sneeze like humans.
Oh, yeah. Then we had to talk about, well, dogs sneeze.
True.
And then I looked up a video of, and I was like, you know what? I have never seen a pig sneeze. So I found a YouTube video of pigs sneezing. And now I know something I didn't know before.
And now we've seen a video of pigs sneezing. Yeah.
Yeah. So boars do sneeze, apparently.
Yeah. So, like, they tried to steal this map. Couldn't do it. Also, fun fact, do you remember who covered Tom in mud?
Huck.
Yeah, it sure was. It was Huck.
Which, why was Huck covered in mud? Huck covered himself in mud first. He, like, drops down, like, oh my god, we skipped over the whole fucking thing, like, because it comes into the plot later. They go on a quote-unquote raft. The boys jump into a boat.
It's they steal Muff's raft, like Caitlin said, air quotes, but it's clearly like a canoe or like something.
Yeah, it's an actual boat. It's like a rowboat. And they're like, oh, let's get in this raft, which is funny because the actual raft they referred to as a boat, but I digress. So they go in, and then it's just like a cut to Tom sleeping, splayed out like he's being nailed to a cross. And he like wakes up in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. You're like, what the? Like, so they were just on a boat, and now all of a sudden they're here? The boat apparently crashed off screen.
Yeah.
They never mentioned this, but that's why he's splayed out like he's on the show Lost. Yeah, but this comes into play later. Mm-hmm. So that's why I bring it up. But then he's like looking around for Huck, and he's like, Huck, where are you? Where are you? And then Huck appears like Spider-Man about to make out with Mary Jane, mm-hmm. and he's like naked and covered in mud.
Mm-hmm.
But then the way that they look at each other, it was so loving.
Well, and then Huck, again, like, just, God, to have someone look at you that way. Like, and then Huck takes like mud. I don't know if he takes it off his own body. In my head, he did.
Yeah.
And he like puts it on Tom's face.
It's very erotic.
It's like quite gentle. And like, Caitlin and I looked at each other like, what the fuck kind of movie are we watching now? But anyway, so they don't get the map. And then like they stumble into this weird haunted house.
Oh, right.
Abandoned, like, kind of shack that is rumored to be haunted. And they, like, hide up on the second story, looking down.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe and Emmett come in with the map.
Right. It just so happened that was the place that led them next on the treasure map.
That's the place where the treasure was. How did the boys know to go there?
Well, the treasure wasn't there.
Yeah, it was.
Well, the treasure was in the cave, I thought.
They moved it to the cave.
Oh, see, I was so... Tiffany really held my hand through this movie.
I did, which is alarming.
Because I would get so caught up on, like, a weird moment that my brain would just drift to the side. Like, I would pull over. If this movie was a highway, I was pulling over onto the shoulder and, like, gripping the wheel just thinking, like, what just happened? Meanwhile, the movie's still going. I'm, like, way behind. I'm miles behind, and I wouldn't be paying attention. And Tiffany would be... I'd be like, wait, why did that happen? And Tiffany's like, oh, my God, they literally just exploded.
Yeah, so they find the treasure, basically. Like, but they unfold the map, and they leave it on this table, and the boys are up above, and they have, like, a fishing hook.
Yeah.
That they're trying to lower from the ceiling to get the map, because in their minds, this map is the proof that Muff didn't kill Doc, which still is tenuous at best to me.
Yeah.
So there's like a few literal holes in this map where a fishing hook could easily go through and catch it. But they're trying to just, like, catch the corner of the paper.
Demonstrating.
Can you hear that? It doesn't work. Right. It's dumb.
Take it. Do an experiment at home. Take, like, a fishing hook and just try to gently brush it again. It's not going to pierce it.
Or if you don't have a fishing hook, unbend a paper clip and, like, curve it into a hook and try to pick up a piece of paper with the corner of a... You can't do it. These
kids
stupid.
Are dumb.
But they do manage to snag Joe's hat.
Right, and Joe doesn't realize that the hat he has been wearing this entire time lifts straight off of... Now, if you're wearing a baseball hat and then all of a sudden it comes off of your head mid-sentence, would you notice?
Well, here's the thing. I don't wear a lot of hats.
But I have a hat right there. We can experiment.
I feel like if I wore a hat, I would know when I wasn't wearing a hat.
Like a breeze goes through your hair.
You would feel it lift off your head. There right. would be an actual weight missing that had been there before. You would feel it.
Yes.
But he didn't notice. And then Emmett, the dumbass, turns around. And, like, you can see the fishing line coming from the ceiling with the hat. And Emmett just starts losing his mind, thinking it's ghosts. I wrote down it's a haunted hat. And then Joe's like, no, man, it's just cobwebs, which means Joe's an idiot.
Well, have you ever interacted with cobwebs?
Not by choice.
They're incredibly delicate. If cobwebs lift your hat off your head, that ain't cobwebs.
Well, if it is a cobweb, you gotta be damn sure to be terrified about whatever spider made it.
This is very Lord of the Rings-esque.
I don't like it.
Right.
But so they find this treasure, and then Joe decides to burn the map.
Right.
And they're going to relocate the treasure so no one else can find it. And they keep saying number 2 under the cross.
Right.
We're putting it at number 2 under the cross, which Caitlin and I are like, what the fuck?
We were trying to theorize what this could possibly
be. Number 2 under the cross. Caitlin's theory I thought was really good. It was like two trees, like underneath two crossed trees, and then like under a pile of human shit.
Yeah, because it's number 2.
Number 2.
We're going to bury it under number 2. I'm like, well, obviously that's human shit.
Yeah.
It didn't even occur to me that it could be an actual number 2, which it is.
Yes. Yeah.
What did you think it was?
I thought it was something like the second of something underneath a cross because I'm very literal. So I thought it was going to be somewhere in a church or something like that.
Yeah. That would have made sense. Oh my God. You know what would have been smart?
Tell me.
It was like, okay, in a church. And you know how they have, like, the stations of the cross? They're all numbered.
Yeah, so the second
number 2
of the cross, yeah.
Oh, my God, let's remake Tom and Huck.
Who would we cast?
Well.
Today.
I don't know any, like, working child actors.
I don't think I do either. But I'm pretending to think about it.
Unless, like, do we, like, age them up so that, like, all the weird, like, homoerotic scenes are, like, actually appropriate?
Or we just make a gay Tom and Huck.
No,
there's
exactly.
Only Huck.
But if we're going to film those scenes, the actors have to be at least 18.
Yeah.
So we get, like, Finn Wolfhard or whatever his name is.
Oh, my God. He would be good.
Would he be a Tom or a Huck?
He would be a Huck, I think.
I feel like he'd be a Tom.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Who would be Huck? Or who would be the other one?
It can't just be someone else from Stranger Things.
No.
What? And it can't just be another one of the kids from It.
I don't know any other children.
I'm feeling hard pressed to name any children as well.
Oh, what about there's that kid who was like, there's that other kid, he's like,
oh, yeah.
Jason Tremblay or something. Jason,
oh, the one that had the long hair.
No, he's like one of the kid actors.
He
now
had long hair in that movie that he was like nominated for, right? The Room.
Oh, right, yeah, that kid, he's like a teenager now.
Yeah, Johnny Longhair.
Yeah, he could be Tom and or Huck.
Yeah, that's not bad.
All right, let's do it.
Well, let's
Hollywood call us.
We'll talk about this later. Anyway, then what is it? It cuts to, like, again, this movie makes no sense. And then it cuts to a scene where the judge in the town, we find out, is also the pastor of the town.
Yeah.
Or the priest or whichever denomination it is. And he's presiding over a funeral for Tom because they found his hat.
That morning.
Up, yeah, washed
no one looked
up
for him.
Next to the destroyed boat.
And we were like,
river.
The boat was destroyed?
Yeah.
We never
no
saw
idea.
That.
We never saw a boat crash. We just saw him, like, delicately wake up from shore.
And so they were, like, having a funeral for a kid who went missing that morning. By the way, like, 5 people have died in this town over the course of this movie. And we were like, who's the funeral floor? And I thought, oh, maybe it's for the guy that got stabbed to death. He hasn't had a funeral yet. Mm. What about that old lady that's sitting in a box still? When was her funeral? And no, it's for Tom Sawyer, And they climb up into the roof and they're like, oh boy, we're having a funeral for you. And then Huck gets jealous because the whole town's mourning him. And he's like, well, if I die, no one's going to mourn me.
He's been there.
It's my waking thought every morning. Yeah. My last thought before I sleep.
Sure.
Yeah. Albeit, let's make a promise to be at each other's funerals.
Yeah. I'm going to die first, though.
We'll both be at each other's funerals. Like, yeah.
I'll be there in spectral form.
Promise.
I promise.
No, we don't know this.
But they're doing like my favorite trope in this kind of situation where they're secreted away from everyone else. But they're divided by like a very thin, it's not even a full proper ceiling. Like it's like a latticework ceiling where you can look down and see. Mm-hmm. So it's not a solid floor dividing them.
No.
And they are talking, like the pastor's presiding over this funeral, this hushed, gathered room full of the town. He's the only one speaking. Mere feet above, these two yokels are like having a full volume conversation.
Yeah.
And no one hears it. That drives me bananas.
Well, and Huck then pushes Tom through the roof.
Yeah.
And he falls. It should have killed him for real.
But it didn't.
No. And so the whole time, and of course, everyone's going, if I could only see him one last time. And then he peers and everyone runs up and the aunt's so excited. But then Becky pops and she just like slugs him in the face.
Yeah. Which is, he was excited to fall through the roof because she said she would kiss him.
Yeah, no, she did not.
And she didn't. Because they kissed once before when they got engaged. We didn't talk about
that. Which is the moment that you're still jealous of.
I know, I just like rage blocked out. No, like he like proposed. He's like, do you know what it means to be engaged? It's like you tell someone you love them and then you kiss them. And so they did that. Then he gave her like a doorknob as an engagement ring.
Yeah, he's like, that's your engagement ring. She just fully accepts it. Like, okay.
Yeah, and then she like finds out he had like been previously engaged to someone else like 2 months before and she gets mad.
Ages ago. It was almost 2 months.
God, so stupid.
Kids are dumb.
Kids are stupid.
So then everyone's all excited that Tom is alive.
But that, like, makes Huck sad, so Huck leaves town. When Tom goes back to check on Huck's, like, place, Joe's there.
Right.
And, like, catches him, because he finally found out who the marble belonged to.
Yeah.
God, this movie.
It's so good, right?
And it's the best. And then he, like, threatens Tom. Like, you're not going to tell anybody or else I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, and he doesn't, why doesn't he kill Tom here? Tom just get away? I don't remember.
I don't think there was a real reason. Maybe because he just didn't want to kill a kid, because he thought he would be able to scare the kid enough.
Oh, but yeah, like, don't tell anybody what happened or else I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Joe, like, wanders off, but then Tom, for as chaotic as he is, he has a good heart, as Aunt Polly says. This suddenly turns into Law and Order Hannibal.
It does. This turns into like a very gritty courtroom drama.
Right.
Like everyone is smoking a pipe. There's just like a hazy cloud of smoke in this courtroom. The pastor judge is presiding over this and like the prosecution is just running away with this.
Yeah.
Like they've got one guy up there being the person to verify that the knife that was used in the murder was sold to Muff. Yes, it was. And then they ask the defense if they have any questions. No. And then they bring Joe up to the stand and they ask him. And he says, yeah, I saw him stab him 4 times and whatever. And then they ask the defense if they have any questions. They say no. And they're like, it'd be cool if you actually had a defense. And then they're like, we do. We call Tom to the stand.
And everyone gasps. And little Tom Sawyer runs across. And he like walks slowly up to the stand. And then he puts his hand on the Bible. And they're like, do you swear to tell the truth? And then the prosecutor is like, it would be the first time. And then like everyone laughs. And then Tom, enraged by this accusation of being a liar, which is completely warranted. Mm-hmm. He's like, I do swear to tell the truth. And then he didn't have a southern accent. I don't know why I gave him one. But yeah, so then he goes up, he testifies, and he's still shy, and he's still nervous, because, like, Joe's staring at him.
And Joe's, like, unsheathing his knife.
Yeah.
That looks like it's made out of rubber from his belt.
And also, not only is he going to get murdered, he signed an oath with Huck that they would never tell anyone in blood, which I want to get to that in a sec.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but then he gets all excited, and he jumps up from his little chair. And he just goes, like, he wasn't stabbed 4 times. He was stabbed 3 times. And then the coroner, jumps up and he goes, that's true. It was 3 times and I didn't tell anybody. Okay, that's great. Okay, that's that corroborates?
Confirms. But yes, corroborates.
I can never say that word. Corroborates his story. Like, oh, he is telling the truth. And then he was like, it was Joe who did it. It was Joe. And you got very mad about the way that that was filmed.
I did?
Yeah, because he goes...
It sounds like me.
He goes, it was... He goes, it wasn't Muff who stabbed him. It was Joe. And then it was silence. And then he goes, Joe did it. And then everyone gasped. Yeah, and you're like, why didn't they gasp before?
Yeah, it's like as soon as he confirms who killed him, that's when everyone should have a hubbub. It shouldn't be like after the second time they say the name. Like, I get there was dramatic suspense and pausing, but like, come on.
They should have just cut that last line. It should have just been like, and it wasn't Muff who did it or who stabbed him. It was Joe who stabbed him. And he should have done
a dramatic
part. And the camera whips around and then does like a rack focus on Joe's face.
Yeah, and then Joe like takes his rubber knife and he throws it right at Tom. But Tom has every Bible that's ever been written put into one bound Bible. It was so thick. It was astonishing.
Yeah, it was the only combination Torah / King James Bible.
Slash the Book of Mormon. Yeah, but the knife still made it all the way through. Like, that book had to have been at least, like...
Well, it was for...
10 inches across. Like, it was massive.
It was large font for people with poor eyesight.
I guess.
Thank God for that.
Right, well, thank God no one can read that book now. There's a giant knife mark through it.
Yeah.
It's been stabbed through.
The one time Tom is dexterous in this entire movie, because we've seen this kid tripping over himself time and time again. Like, he got his shoe caught in a floorboard, and Hug had to save him again. He got his coat caught. He had to get saved. He fell off a raft. All this. The one time he's got, like, ninja reflexes is when a knife is hurtling at his face at 100 miles an hour.
And then Joe just decides to bust through a window. Like, he takes off running over the lap.
He runs over laps.
Like, they cut to showman's laps and his feet running across them. And then he springs through, like, he crashes through a window and just, like, runs away. And everyone's like, oh, no, he's gone. Okay, good work, Tom. Thanks for saving Muff's life. And then they, like, Tom's at home and he's, like, real worried about the fact that now... The man that he just publicly accused of murder is missing, and his shit little cousin and the rest of his family are making fun of him for it.
Right. He was like, oh no, like, there's someone at the door for you. It's Joe. And then, like, this other cousin who has no lines, who I don't know if you noticed her.
Yeah, of course I did. She was like fucking Lurch.
She was, like, staring at JTT the entire movie. Yeah. I was like, this is some director's daughter that had a crush on him, and they, like, put her in every scene, and she has no lines, but she's just eye-fucking him the entire time. Mm-hmm. It was really... I'm like, that's your cousin. Stop it, girl.
Hey, cousins in the 1840s meant different things.
You know what? That's a really good point. This is very historically accurate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so this whole film is laughing at him. He's upstairs that night. Yeah, and then, like, somebody comes through the window...
Mm-hmm.
And Tom, in his infinite genius, is like, I'll just hide under my quilt. One will find me here.
He pulled the sheet over his face.
And held it up. Like, no one will know he's there. And then it drifts back and it's...
The sheet's like, he's trembling. The sheet's like moving. No one's gonna see.
I don't even remember why Huck was there.
Oh my God. Huck was there to come back and be like mad at him for confessing or for telling the truth at the trial because they swore a blood oath.
Right.
Do you want to talk about the blood oath?
So, okay, I was very relieved because it's a very 80s, not 80s, just general trope. Of, like, whenever two characters have to do, like, a blood pact, they slice a blade across their palm.
Right.
I hate this. It makes no sense. It's the worst place to cut yourself, especially if you're on an adventure, which they usually are, and they're going to need to grapple things.
Mm-hmm.
If you, Tiffany, were to do a blood oath and you had to sign something in blood or do a blood handshake, where would you cut yourself in order to have a minimally invasive cut that has enough blood to sign out your name, like Tom Sawyer, TS?
Initials. I mean, they pricked their fingers like Sleeping Beauty.
Aw.
I don't know. Like the wrists, right? If you're going like...
Oh God, you would die!
But that's the best place to get a lot of blood. Like the wrist or like the femoral artery, that's a good one too, right?
You would die.
I know.
Oh.
I'm making these things called jokes. They're not landing.
You're such a good actress.
Thank you so much.
That you convinced me.
I don't know where I would cut myself from. Like, I feel like a finger might not be a bad.
That's true.
Yeah, like a fingertip. What do you think?
I don't know. I've thought of this. Face? Like, what's a good part of your body to cut if you needed a lot of blood for some reason?
I mean, maybe your head, like, you could still go on an adventure.
That wouldn't reopen.
You bleed a lot from the head.
Like, yeah, forehead cut.
But, like, you don't need your forehead to grapple things or climb things or whatever. Like,
just cut off your forehead.
You cut off your forehead. No, like, you just do, like, a slice on your face or your head because that will bleed a lot, but it's not going to impede necessarily something you need to do.
Well, and you want something that's not going to easily reopen, because if you are out on an adventure, you don't want to have to worry about a wound that's continuing to open.
What the fuck kind of adventure do you think I'm going to get into? I'm going to need to sign a blood oath right now at this stage in my life.
It's one of those quicksand adventures. It's like, okay. It's like the one in this movie. You're finding a lost treasure, kind of Goonies.
Like, that does sound like me.
I don't know. I feel like maybe like this part of your arm, like
she's gesturing at her, the upper like part of her arm.
Not, what, yeah. I don't even know what this is called.
Arm. That's your bicep.
Okay. Wait, I thought this was your bicep.
I thought that's what you were gesturing at.
No, I was pointing to this. Like tricep?
Maybe.
The back of your forearm. I feel like because you're not.
This is your forearm.
What the fuck is this?
Your upper arm.
Okay.
Oh my god.
No, because you don't, like, you're not, like, constantly... Anyway.
But, like, the thing that upset me about the blood pack in this is, like, they just grabbed a piece of, like, loose wood to write this on, and Tom wrote it because, as he said, it wasn't good with his letters.
So I ain't good with writing. God, and it's like, oh, you're illiterate, you river trash.
So they, like, Tom writes it out, and then they each prick their finger, and they, like, sign their initials, but, like... Tom, again, very erotically, like, has to sign for Huck because Huck doesn't know how to write HF. So he, like, takes his hand.
Gently.
And, like, uses his finger to write his initials. But, like, I'm just sitting there cringe. Like, my soul left my body a little because he's, like, dragging the open wounded finger, like, against the grain of the wood.
Against the grain.
To get the blood. Oh, my God. It was so gross.
You physically, like, you actually cringed.
Well, it was, like, one of those things, you know, where, like, you see something that's so upsetting, like, your blood pressure just plummets and you feel like you're gonna faint.
Yeah,
like that's how I felt watching that. And it also was so upsetting.
They signed their initials alarmingly big.
Yeah,
it was like they were trying to get the people in the back, like in the what do they call that, the nosebleed seats, yeah, to be able to see how big these letters were. Yeah, it was upsetting.
Yeah, but so Huck came back because he's real mad that he broke the blood oath, and then he's like, I'm leaving for good. Goodbye forever.
Okay.
And he, like, leaves.
And then he goes, I'm not saving you again. And he's like, good. Which we're like, you know he's going to save him again.
Right.
Yeah.
There's so much left to talk about.
Oh, they go into a cave. It's a May Day celebration. Everyone's happy Tom's alive. And for some reason, in Hannibal, Missouri, it is a tradition to go... Spurlunking.
They were, like, kids dancing around a maypole. The girls were dancing around a maypole and, like, throwing salt over their shoulder and looking into a mirror to see who their husband was going to be. And the guys are, like, eating pie. Muff is telling stories. And then they're like, all right, it's cave time.
Like, what is this holiday?
What the fuck is cave time? Like, they all just, like, let the kids loose in this massive cave.
Yeah, there's, like, two adults and approximately 6 dozen children. Yeah, like, they're just running amok in a cavern.
Yeah.
And they're just like, hey, everyone, come on back. By the way, this is literally the day after Tom Sawyer rescued Muff.
And there's a killer.
From being killed.
And there's a killer on the loose.
Right. And then Moff doesn't think to look for the one child in town who saved his life. And he's like, I just assume he got out okay. No, well, what happened was Tom dares Becky to spelunk further into the cave. And yes, which she does. And them and a single candle is enough to light an entire abandoned cavern.
Okay, well, to be fair, they also had a lantern.
Okay, so they had two candles. And between the two of them, it was almost like Hollywood had lit up this cavern.
Which was made of the same material that, like, Olmec from Legends of the Hidden Temple was made out of.
Oh, yeah, he had, like, the wrinkles around his mouth. And it was that kind of material.
Oh, God. But, yeah, so all the Muff and the other adult gather all the children out of there. And then they're drinking, they're passing back the whiskey, and someone's like, did you get all the kids? And they're like, yeah, pretty sure.
No, you didn't notice that the kid that saved your life the day before? No. And also, like, the one guy, it's like, he's Becky's dad or something?
Who knows?
It felt like he was Becky's dad.
The judge master?
Well, he goes like, he specifically says, Rebecca, don't go wandering off. So the two kids that they know of didn't come back, and they're just like, yeah. It would be like if I went with, like, my niece to a event, and, like, she didn't come back, and I just I didn't notice that she hadn't come back. Like, you fucking know. Mm-hmm. So these two dumbasses are, like, wandering in the cave, and they're shouting and echoing. And that causes a rock slide?
It causes an indoor avalanche.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Becky is still, like, throughout the scene, as you can see the cave shaking, the rocks are coming down, you can hear the rumbling, she's still shouting hello, and Tom is like, stop, and she's like, don't tell me what to do, and I'm like, bitch, there be rocks.
There be rocks.
They are falling. Like, shut the fuck up. What are you doing?
She has boulders rumbling towards her in, like, right in front of her, and she's just staring at them. Mm-hmm. This is a 16-year-old actress. I get annoyed when you see, like, a 7-year-old in a movie. Like, I hate that when it's like, oh, it's like in Spider-Man when, like, the big thing's falling down on the kid and he just slack-jawed stares at it.
Yeah, when you have so much time.
I'm sorry, you have the wherewithal to run away from something that's falling on top of you.
Yeah.
When you're 7, let alone when you're 16-year-old Rachel Lee Cook.
Good job, you did it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so, but Tom then has to, like, all, like, you know, 3.5 feet tall of him has to run and, like, push her out of the way from the falling rocks.
I mean, I feel like that's something you don't even voluntarily control. Like, that's an involuntary, your body gets out of the way for you. It takes more effort to consciously stay in place.
Yeah. But anyway, so they're fine. They end up being fine, unfortunately.
Yeah, but you know who hears them shouting and caterwauling on and causing an avalanche? Joe.
Yeah.
He's in the cave.
And he just chases them around the cave.
Yeah, but you know who else figured out the mud trick was Joe.
Wait, he's covered in mud.
He, like, jumps off of the top of this, like, rock overhang covered in mud. And Caitlin and I, like, lost it. We're like, mud works both ways.
Like, right.
I guess everyone's invisible with mud. Yeah, they didn't see him there. There's a giant shadow.
Nope.
So he's chasing him. And then the only way they're able to get away is by crawling through a hole only big enough for, like, a 2-foot actor like him.
Yeah, so they finally, like, use their tiny diminutive size to their advantage. They're crawling away. Joe can't crawl through there, but they crawl approximately 20 feet and then they just loudly proclaim, we lost him.
Yeah.
And then they settle down and it's like a nice little quiet moment, and then all of a sudden they see the lantern light catches something weird. And what is it?
It's a Muriel's one-eyed Muriel skeleton.
It's just ripped straight from the Goonies. It's a one-eyed skeleton. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, he must have died here. And yeah, no shit!
And they screamed incredibly loudly, so Joe was able to, like, locate them again.
Right, so Joe finds them again, but then, like, they find the two under the cross. I don't even see the cross.
There was no cross.
There was a spray-painted two on the wall.
On the wall inside this cavern, at, like, right below, like, an ulterior exit. And yeah. So Rachel Lee Cook goes through the exit, and then Tom is like, no, I'm going to stay here and get the treasure. While there's, like, a madman wandering around the cave, he doesn't think to leave and then come back and tell the adults where it is because he's a fucking idiot. So he, like, unearths this treasure remarkably quickly.
Yeah.
And then, surprise, Joe's there to murder him.
Yeah, and so they do this whole... There just happens to be a cavern that's endless right next to them.
Right.
And then, you know, it looks like he's going to kill Tom or whatever because he's got, like, he keeps backhanding this kid. And he keeps getting back up for some reason. He's going to kill him. And then who swings in?
Tarzan.
Huck.
Huck. Right, Huck.
Huck swings in and saves the day, of course. Because Tom can't fucking take care of himself, this goon. Oh. So then Huck gets in a brawling match with Joe because they're about the same size. It's more of a fist fight, even though Huck is 12. And then they're fighting. And then Tom does the one smart thing in the entire movie. And he goes, look, hey. And he waves the thing over
the treasure chest.
The treasure chest over the pit. And he's like, I'm going to drop it. And then Joe comes
up. That's a really good impression.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, he's like, I'm going to drop this in. He's like, come and get it.
And then Joe just lunges for him, and they both almost fall in, but oh no, it just Joe falls in with the treasure
chest.
Well,
because Huck is strong enough as a grown pre-man to pull back Tom, who is holding on to Joe, who's holding on to the treasure chest, but then, like, Tom's shirt sleeve rips off, which I probably found thrilling at the time. And so, like, he then tumbles down to the cavern with the treasure, and, like, one shirtless... Tom later, like, stumbles back out, and then he and Huck finally make out. Can you imagine? They don't.
But then you were also very annoyed by this.
I'm annoyed by everything. You're going to have to be more specific.
So, like, this is seconds after this. Mm-hmm. Tom and Huck now, they're sitting over the cavern mm-hmm. where this man just fell to his death. And they're, like, swinging their feet. And they're smiling and laughing. And you're like, they just murdered somebody.
Yeah.
And they're, like, way too calm about this.
Yeah, like, they both almost got killed.
Yeah.
They murdered someone, and they're just, like, palling around like it's casual Friday.
Right. Work. And Huck, who just also thought that this massive treasure that they've been looking for, like, it just fell down this ravine, he's just like, oh, shucks. And then Tom's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I forgot to tell you. I saved the treasure. This was the one consistent thing in the movie. I called shenanigans. Right. There's no way JTT would be able to pick up a treasure chest full of coins. He's way too weak for that. I would be too weak for that. But no, so but then he goes, oh yeah, I took the coins out because it was too heavy for me to lift. I'm like, thank you, because that really bothered me. Then he
tucked them all in his shirt.
Yes, yeah,
so and climbed out of the cave.
Timmy's demonstrating for
I'm
us.
Demonstrating.
She's holding up the pouch, the hem of her shirt.
I put my phone in it. Look, it's treasure.
Yeah, that's...
Surprise.
But then he comes out of the cave, everything's fine. They get pulled out and everyone's like, yay, you killed the guy. And you also say you got the treasure. They got hip hip hoorays.
Yeah, three of them.
And then it's like time cut to later, and they're all like, Tom's all like polished up for some reason.
Yeah, because they got nice clothes now. They got nice money.
Because they've got money to spend in this back like wards town. I don't know who's taking all this money. So yeah, so they're all good, and everyone's like, yay, Tom, you're awesome. And then Tom goes to see Huck.
Yeah, like Huck's weird river trash house.
It's just like, it's like a lean-to. Not even, there's not even a roof on it.
It's a ravine. It's like a small chasm where he's living with a tree with like a picture of a president tacked to it.
Yeah, I still don't know who he has like a photograph, which back in 1840s, photographs were not easy to come by, especially in Missouri.
Missouri. Maybe it was his dad. Maybe it was old Pap Finn.
We found out his dad's name was actually Pap.
I'm not okay with that, but it is. His dad's actual Lord biologically given name was Pap Finn.
And so he has like a photo of, I thought it maybe was Jefferson Davis, I don't know, but he just has a photo hanging up for some reason. So Tom is perturbed. He gets to the hole in the ground where he lives. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, who are you? Because he sees a stranger.
So yeah, he sees someone whose back is to him. And he's, I mean, it looks like he's wearing tails. Like, he's just missing the top hat. Like, he's wearing a formal long coat.
Yeah, morning coat.
And his hair is, like, slicked and combed back. And he turns around and it's Huck. And Huck's like, I'm getting adopted by the widow. What was her name?
Widow Fuck.
The widow Fuck. He's getting adopted by her, and, like, he's excited about school and, like, getting to live in town and stuff, because it seemed all he's ever wanted was a family, and Tom's giving him a hard time. Well, who's going to live here? I guess I will. And then he gets, like, spooked by the trees, and then he's like, Huck, I'll come with you. You're going to need help in town. And then the movie, like, ends. It freeze frames on them.
Right. It was very...
The Widow Rogers?
Widow... I feel like it starts with a D.
The Widow Danger? I feel like it's something. I thought it was Rogers. It is the Widow Douglas. Widow Douglas.
So, but we were annoyed because the Widow Douglas is the one who stops the lynching of Muff. And we were like, who is this lady? They never say her name. Mm-hmm. They never say who she is. She just is like this authority figure. She just like walks out there with a cane and like slams it into the soil.
She's kind of the dowager of Hannibal, Missouri.
I mean, she manages to take a redneck lynch mob from 100 to 5 while just being like, this man deserves a fair trial. And then they're just like, okay. You know, holy mm-hmm. shit, this lady's awesome.
Yeah, she's cool as hell.
But, and then I figured they never say her name. She keeps popping up, and they're like, who is this? But then I figured maybe that, oh, they don't say her name because she's an actual character in Huck Finn. And I was like, they don't want to spoil that's the lady who adopts Huck.
And you're probably right. I would watch a spinoff with her. I would just watch, don't you laugh? She was great. She's the only one who got shit done.
That's true.
And people took her seriously.
Yeah, so good for Widow
Douglas. I want her backstory. Did she kill her husband? Probably.
I hope so.
I hope she did.
Yeah, she was awesome.
But yeah, so that's this weird-ass movie.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I mean, I feel like
scale of 10.
Not been too shy about it. I didn't enjoy it.
Oh no.
Like, I was so excited when you said it. I was like, oh my God, this is gonna be exciting. I love that movie. I love JTT. This is gonna be perfect. I mean, I'd give it like a 4.
Oh really?
Yeah. I didn't feel like it held up very well. Mm. Like, as a kid, I can see why I liked it. There was a lot going on. There were cute boys. There was adventure. There was this or that. Like, as an adult who's like not interested in that, the plot was very ridiculous and like a lot of unnecessary scene filling stuff, and it just looked cheap.
Yeah.
So it did not hold up for me. I give it a 4. What about you?
I mean, I think, yeah, it kind of fell apart. There was like weird plot holes, but the things that I care about stupidly, I'm like, I was like impressed. I was like, oh, they actually like put effort into making period appropriate clothing. And they tried to do period appropriate hairstyles on JTT.
Yeah, but like, a bowl cut.
He had a bowl cut.
Except for that one reshoot scene we clocked.
Oh yeah, that was, his hair was weird.
Yeah.
But like, you could see his hair curtains just struggling to come out. Like, you can take JTT out of the 90s, but you can't take the 90s out of him.
No.
So I appreciated, and I liked some of the dialogue. I liked some of the turns of phrase, which I presume are probably just lifted directly from the books. Because I'm like, they're too clever for this type of a production.
Yeah.
There's a reason why this has sort of faded into obscurity.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same, like, I mean, Casper still to this day is like, you mention it and like, if you're a woman over 30 and under 45, like, they're like, oh my God, Casper. And like, they'll know.
Yeah, that was a sexual awakening.
Right. But then this one is just like, eh.
Yeah. Which is weird, because I do, and we did absolutely zero research about this, but I just feel in my bones that they probably thought that this was going to be such a huge success, because at the time it came out, the cast that it had, like those two kids together, they probably thought, this is like the start of something. Like, this is the start of like, then next we're going to do just a Huck movie, and then we're going to do another Tom movie, and I feel like they thought that, and I don't know if it did very well. But it certainly hasn't stood the test of time.
I don't think it's as bad as Tiffany says it is.
Okay, that's fair.
But, no, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But I just, it's not even bad, it's just forgettable.
Yeah.
It's just, like, bland.
Yeah.
But if you just woke up from a coma from the 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're curious, just, yeah, go give it a shot. It's on Disney Plus for free.
Yeah, the movie for coma recovery. Tom Huck. You heard it here first. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't what I expected.
Yeah. Well, that's our deep dive into Tom and Huck. Any other parting thoughts?
I don't know. JTT forever. He kind of faded into, not obscurity, but he kind of just turned into a normal person, which good for him. I feel like he was able to kind of avoid that like pitfall of fame that a lot of those kid actors got into.
And for those that don't remember, like, or weren't the right age at that era, like, he was, like...
He was like a Beatle.
Oh, my God, yeah. He was the number one. He was, like, what Justin Bieber was 10 years ago. Like, just girls screaming and tearing their hair out over this kid.
Yeah.
Which I don't get. I mean, whatever. Now, obviously.
I was so into him.
Yeah, I liked him, but I was more like, it was more of like, oh, my sister's really into him, and I think he's cute.
Well, you, fun fact, your sister and I are the same age.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, see, I was, like, a little too young to understand fully the feelings I felt for this. Yeah, so, no, I think, I didn't get, my first, like, real big, like, celebrity crush until probably, like, I was maybe 12-ish.
Yeah.
So, I was a little young, but, I definitely remember finding him attractive.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, no, this is a film.
This was a film. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, that Tiffany is on Instagram or wherever she likes to be nowadays.
Oh, I'm not really doing much social media. But yeah, Instagram would probably be the one place, at TSolia. And Caitlin's extremely funny on Twitter.
Yeah, I barely tweet anymore, man. Social media, I'm just like, so, I don't care.
I'm worn out. It's depressing. I don't
get
involved that much. But she's there at Duffosaurus_Rex.
Yeah, and, like, people have messaged me from this, and, like, I respond to everything, so...
Yeah, we've gotten some messages on our Nostalgia Killer as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I had just found the password for that, so it's back, baby.
We are back.
Yeah, I know, like, only old people are on Twitter now, but, you know, we're old people, so...
Yeah, we are. But this has been great doing this in person again.
Yeah, I know. This is our second in-person one in a very long time, so it's a thrill.
It's a treat.
Firing on all cylinders.
We're doing our best, guys. We're trying to get back at the swing of things.
Who isn't? Cool. Well, this has been fun. Thanks for watching with us.
Thanks for listening to us.
That's right.
I'm Tiffany.
I'm Kaylee.
Goodbye.
Bye.